Tim Goodman's TV Talk Machine is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon, they sell underwear, shirts, socks on the internet. And what their stuff is, it's better than whatever you're wearing right now. There's smart design, premium fabrics, simple shopping, super easy. You click around, find some beautiful stuff. Stripey socks. I love their stripey socks so much. I am addicted to them. I wish they made different, more kinds of them, because I would just lose all my money buying socks at Mack Weldon. You click a couple of times, and they show up at your door. It's super easy. And if you don't like your first pair, you keep it, and they'll refund your money because they want you to be comfortable. They don't want you to be freaked out about buying clothes on the internet. All their products smell great. Not just because they're made of good materials, but because they're naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, and shirts look good. They perform well, great for working out, going to work, going out on dates, living your life. So go to MackWeldon.com. That's MackWeldon.com. Get 20% off your order using the promo code TVTalk. Mack Weldon. I'm not giving too much away by saying I am wearing Mack Weldon socks right now. Can you hear them? This is a man who's wearing some good socks. Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, it is your host, chief TV critic of The Hollywood Reporter, back alive, barely, from the Television Critics Association Winter Press Tour. It is Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason. Thank you for being patient.
We were going to talk while you were still in residence, but you got laid low by an angry tummy, I believe, is technically the term.
A mess. Yeah, yeah. It was that press tour was kind of a mess because it was food poisoning, basically.
Yeah.
I thought it might have been maybe flu or stomach flu, but pretty much along the lines of the food poisoning.
Yeah.
And then kind of barely limped. I mean, I really wasn't myself until Saturday, maybe. And I flew out on Sunday day and promptly had a flu.
Awesome.
Yes. And which basically just got over that like a day ago, 2 days ago, maybe. Still feeling a little bit of the effects. So not the greatest press tour in history.
Not the greatest.
No.
No. Well, there was some news. We got a lot to talk about since it's been almost 2 weeks since we last spoke.
Yes, it's like
oh man, there's so much. The teletype is
more TV is coming.
More TV is coming.
Yeah,
it's true. So I asked you last time if you thought we were at the peak TV or not, and at the FX session, I guess John Landgraf, the king of peak TV, gave his official prognostication, and apparently not yet. That like 2016, he thinks, is the year of peak TV, but we'll have more this year than last year.
Yeah, we had ratcheted up the latest number that we had got was 409 scripted series at the tail end of 2015, and when John showed up with FX just at the very beginning of January, he said, oops, we have to adjust that upwards to 412 and counting, because here comes a whole bunch more stuff from TCA, and it's just unbelievable. I have to say that.
So peak TV continues.
It really does. And and you know, like we said in the last podcast, the one prior to me being sick, I guess, was I think the takeaway from that was, dude, there's a lot of stuff coming, and a lot of it's pretty good. So, you know, brace yourself.
Yeah, seriously. So, what should we do? You know, a lot of network stuff happened. CBS, Fox, NBC, anything in particular stand out from those guys?
Well, it's two things really. I did a TCA journal on this, and it really was just sort of like I was trying to get a little wonky and basically saying, you know, these guys who used to be fireable over everything that they did, they, you know, their schedules dictated the network. They can't really be blamed anymore. All the decisions about whether the network lives or dies or does well, it's out of their hands. I mean, if you they are programming a dinosaur, you know, like this ship. It's not a dinosaur. Let's just call it a ship. It's not made to be in
a dinosaur that can be used as a ship.
It's a hollowed out dinosor ship.
Okay, got it.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, totally.
It looks like a dinosaur.
Makes sense to me.
It's a ship that's hollowed out, and it's too heavy, and it's sinking into the mud and the sludge in the harbor, and simultaneously trying to turn around
while
being under attack.
So the captain is not who you might blame whoever got them in the mud. But what if the mud is just a natural phenomenon that it was going to happen regardless of who the captain was? Then you can't blame the captain.
You can't. And I think the captain is saying, who built this dinosaur ship?
I love this metaphor. Let's run it. Well, I mean, we don't need to run it into the ground because it's sinking in the mire.
Flats. Yes. Yeah. Who built this dinosaur ship? Because it is antiquated.
So how do we judge entertainment precedents now, or do we? I mean, is there still a way to do it?
You know, I think that if you look at the current landscape where, you know, everybody who's been in place has pretty much been in place for a while. And Nina Tassler, who left CBS, left on her own volition. I'm sure that job gets boring. It's like, oh, we won again. we are really kind of untouched by the fact that no one's watching television, because everybody who's old enough to still be watching television and hasn't done all the streaming and time shifted nonsense, they are watching CBS. And so that network kind of runs itself. So I'm sure she just kind of gave way to the new guy. And, you know, I don't know what they can do anymore unless they, and as I suggested that they should do, they should all get together and, in a cabal and meet somewhere in LA or New York and say, okay, look, we all need to agree that the system's got to change, but we have to do it together. So it's basically collusion, because you can't have one person say, okay, we're going to kill pilot season, or we're going to shift to the, the script season, and then everybody has to be on the same page. Otherwise people are putting scripts in at the same time. And that means the writing staffs get taxed, or they're casting their shows at the same time, which means that, there's not enough actors to go around for the role. And they're all happening at the same time. What they need to do is they need to spread it around 365 days, 12 months a year, and, like, not step on each other's toes. But I don't know. Are you going to get five companies to agree to do that? I don't know.
It's interesting. Hey, the Fox panel was FX and all of that, and then CBS is just counting money, I guess, basically, is all they're doing. But NBC did something unusual, which is not talk about itself and instead talk about Netflix.
Yeah, it's just so dubious.
Huh?
And I wrote a story on that. Unfortunately, it was like, right, I got sick, but I was doing all this research, because it is kind of a wonky thing. But the short of it is, for the very first time, everybody has that numbers guru who spins all these numbers, and they do these special panels and state of the industry. I've been to 100 of these things, but I didn't go to this one from Alan Wurzel. He does a lot of these. And when I didn't, I got back. A lot of people didn't go. And then I got back to find out, hey, NBC released Netflix ratings. What? Because, just to refresh everybody's sense of place on this, Netflix doesn't release ratings. So that was a pretty big deal. And so if you went back through, and I covered it in my story, and I tried to sort of de-wonk it because it's all tied to stuff. But basically they're using a San Francisco company.
Yep. Symphony.
Symphony. Yes. Symphony Advanced Media.
Which is super creepy. It's like an app that you install on your phone, and it listens to you
all the time,
basically, and then uses a Shazam-like technology to find out what's playing on your TV and then logs it.
Yes, exactly. That's why we have you as the tech guy to condense that into one sentence.
There are a couple good links that I'll put in. There's a Wired link and an Observer link that explain a little bit about the technology behind this, because it's weird and the sample is small and it's kind of unclear. And you can just sign up and volunteer for it. So it's interesting. I don't know enough to know how valid their sample is or anything like that. But it's this weird kind of high-tech app alternative to Nielsen Diaries and things like that. And then so we can tell if you're watching Jessica Jones on Netflix and it says, yep, this person is, and it will actually just catalog all the stuff that they're listening to or watching.
Well, here's kind of a wonky version of that too, which is kind of interesting in its own way. Because I was fascinated by this. When Nielsen does its, it does all its data, it has a watermarked thing in all the shows. Netflix and Amazon just strip those out. So because they don't want it reported, because they don't do ratings. So it's interesting to me that a third party could come in, and this is where I kind of had to do a lot of research I mean, I think we'll get to the point where we're talking about whether the methodology is sound, and I don't think it is, and certainly Netflix doesn't think it is. But it's kind of interesting to me that you could do this Shazam technology and basically say, okay, these companies don't want you to know their ratings, but we've tracked people who say they're Netflix subscribers. They've decided to keep their phone on with their microphone on their phone, and once they hear Jessica Jones, we know, okay, they're actually listening to. You know, we can track it in the cloud, and it matches up Shazam technology-wise with Jessica Jones. So we know they watched it. I mean, we know how long they stayed on it, et cetera. So they have a lot of graphics. The interesting thing, though, Jason, is the way, you know, why was this done from NBC and
yeah.
How they did it is like two different things. I think one, they didn't tell us. NBC didn't specifically say what Symphony's metrics were, and you know, and their methodology. So going back into old stories that Adweek did, which is a part of the THR family, Adweek did a story on them at the beginning a year ago, so you know, January 2015, and they were hoping that they said they had 15,000 people who were signed up and were subscribed,
right.
And they were hoping to have 50,000 by the end of the year. Well, now they've scaled that back. They're hoping for 20 to 25,000. So that's all we know. We don't know if any of the 15. First of all, we don't know if any of the information taken by NBC was from the 15,000 people.
Right.
If there were 15,000 total, we don't know if what percentage of those 15,000 are actual Netflix subscribers.
Yeah.
So we don't know how that makes the sample that much smaller, and. Two things. One, Netflix says these are not germane to our business model, so they're wrong. And second, and saying that the methodology was wrong, and they just don't apply to how Netflix does business. But as I wrote in my story, I think what NBC was trying to do was to cleverly say, "Oh, here's these numbers," and I think the inclusion of Orange is the New Black, which had already premiered long ago, and so their numbers were really deflated. I think that was the trigger point for Netflix to come out and say, you know, haha, you're wrong. They're not these numbers. They're these numbers. And then NBC would somehow trick Netflix into giving us the real numbers. The only way you can refute the numbers we give you through Symphony is to say, if we're wrong, prove it. Give us the real numbers, which, of course, Netflix didn't want to do.
There's so much here about NBC taking its time. NBC, in many ways, most ways, doesn't compete with Netflix, other than for your eyeballs. But I mean, Netflix is a subscription service. NBC is selling advertising. The advertising, so then they're calling up an advertising demographic.
Yeah.
And saying what Netflix's ratings are in the advertising demographic, which is okay, I guess, except Netflix doesn't care. There's an actual viewer figure. So it seems so weird that you would draw attention to this. And all I can say is, all I can guess is that this is about kind of, ego and frustration and,
yep.
And being mad that people are talking about Netflix. And the fact is that this is what happens with these companies is they love to not give details because they don't need to. So why should they bother? And I read a story also that said, and we may have talked about it, that HBO now kind of regrets agreeing to be metered.
Yeah.
By Nielsen, that at this point they would really rather not have ratings stories about HBO because it doesn't matter and it's not anyone's business but their own how they run their subscription service. And you know, Amazon won't tell you how many Kindles they sell. We always joke in the tech side, we have this joke about the Jeff the Bezos chart.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bar chart with no numbers on it. It just shows it getting bigger. And he does that all the time where Jeff Bezos at Amazon will be like, look at how we're growing. And it's like, well, you had smaller bars and now the bars are bigger. So yay, it's good. What do the bars mean, Jeff? Oh, moving on. No answer, right? And Netflix is the same way. It's like, hey, that show was the best show we had. How'd it do? We're not saying. We just, it's good. It's all good.
Right.
And I get being frustrated by that if you're NBC, like, oh, everybody's talking about Netflix. They don't have that many viewers. Can we prove they don't have that many viewers? But I'm not sure how it matters for their business. And to spend their time with TV critics just poking holes, trying to poke holes at a competitor, it's just so bizarre.
It's really bizarre. And the funny thing about that was, you know, I've joked before that I go through different phases at these tours. Sometimes I ask a lot of questions. Sometimes I ask no questions. But because I had done all this this stuff, and I had talked to the people behind the scenes prior to Netflix showing up. And to me, this was one of the there were two big news stories coming out of TCA. One was the total revolution of TNT and TBS, which we talked about prior,
right.
And then this one, because you're totally poking the bear on purpose. Mm-hmm. That NBC. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy to say I have Netflix's ratings. That to me woke everybody up. So I wrote that, you know, like they're going to have a response, but of course I talked to people behind the scenes. So when it came time for them to show up, I was trying to get the microphone. And so the first two questions were random, like Marvel questions. And then I asked the question about these ratings, and Ted Sarandos started laughing. He's like, I'm surprised that was the third question. But one of the things that he did answer, because I had a couple of follow-up questions, he did actually admit to something that I wrote in my piece that annoys critics, and that is, you know, I did ask him. I said, so, you know, what gets everybody upset is that you don't give us numbers, and then you say things like you just said, Jason, like, you know, it's our fastest growing show ever. This is our most watched show compared to what, right? So you can't have it both ways. And he actually admitted that that was him. He said I shouldn't be doing that, basically. And he admitted that and now if that becomes the company line, then I'm okay with it. Because my feeling is, if I was Netflix, I wouldn't release ratings. It's not part of the business model. And if I was HBO and Showtime, I wouldn't do it either. And like you said, you've maybe found a story where HBO regrets that. I know that they've always done it, and it doesn't make any sense. And Sarandos has come out and said point blank many times, I have no idea why they're doing that. It's not their business model.
Right.
So I think I'm fine. And it's weird. It's like, I really like John Landgraf from FX. He's one of my favorite. He's one of my favorite executives, but he and I disagree. And he really thinks that Netflix's numbers should be public, and that eventually somebody will get it. My feeling is like, why do you care so much? You should only care if Netflix continues to say, you know, if they say stuff like this would be a huge hit on network. Yeah. I want to know the numbers. But if they just shut up about it and just say it's doing well for us and it's working for us, then great. But you can't have it both ways. And that's, I think, everybody's problem with Netflix.
Now, didn't we also get from Netflix an idea of how much money they're spending on TV development this year? Isn't it like $5
billion? $6
billion.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that came out, and people were like looking around like, that's got to be a typo, right? That's a typo.
You got to think about it, though. So think about this. Not only do they launch around the world, which we mentioned last time, that mm-hmm. they're now sort of in 100, however many countries there are, they're basically in that many countries. And in all those markets, almost every show that's a Netflix original, certainly all the new ones, they're everywhere. It's worldwide simultaneous release, like the TV Talk Machine.
Much like this.
Exactly, yes. Right. So there's that. So it's value beyond the United States. They are getting all the value in all the markets by doing this. But I keep seeing those stories, and we've talked about it, where like there was a story from TCA about CW and CBS talking about taking their shows off of Netflix down the road and pouring them into maybe a version of CBS All Access, their own streaming service. It's very clear to me that Netflix is planning to be ultimately to be HBO and have their own shows and some other stuff that they buy that comes on and off. But it's really about you're buying them for their shows because they are not dumb. They foresee a day when certainly their competitors are going to at least consider, and their suppliers are going to consider setting up their own things. And you pull all the CW shows and all the CBS shows and all the NBC shows. You put all of those shows off of Netflix. What's left? Well, the one thing you can control, which is your original programming. So it makes sense to me that they'd spend that money.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be interesting to see who does pull their programming from there. Because everybody has benefited from the Netflix bump.
Well, that's the threat, right? I'm not sure whether it's a real threat. Do you think? I mean, I could see CBS doing it because they are trying to put this All Access thing and make a real product out of it. But, you know, there are a lot of benefits to being on Netflix, too.
There are. And I think that when you start to see this sort of vertical integration of these companies, it hurts somebody like the CW, right? The CW is perfect to have their shows on Netflix because they need to get seen. It doesn't matter to CBS because CBS viewers are really not watching Netflix in droves. And so, you know, their percentages are smaller than any other channel, so they're fine. I think what's going to happen – and look, HBO has even had bumps, and Showtime is very happy with their agreement. So, you know, I think they're, what's their agreement with Hulu, I think.
Right. And they've got, you can actually like subscribe to Showtime from inside Hulu, I think.
Yeah. Right. And so those, so that's kind of an unbundled way just to do Showtime that way. And those are according to Showtime, and they are, at least they're savvy enough to know like, hey, we don't have all the stats, but they are truly ecstatic. They're like, people are growing that little skinny bundle. They call those things the skinny, like, you know, your cord cutter. They say that that percentage is growing every day, and that there's a market there for that. So I think there are these kind of off-brand opportunities, or off-platform opportunities. But I would also think, just like down the line, Jason, if everybody pulls out of Netflix and Netflix only has original programming, which is fine, I think then it's a matter of time to until we find out how are each of those individual bundles working. Like, how is CBS's bundle working?
Yeah.
Like, are people really buying that? Because if they're not buying it, it would probably behoove them, and money changes everything, to stick it back on Netflix.
Well, you get a release windows, too, where you're going to end up with, you know, and some of this is true now, but you're going to end up with the first couple of seasons of something on Netflix. But if you want, like, the current, you know, the three most recent seasons of something, then you got to go over to CBS All Access or something like that. But you know, only if that works, right? I mean, that's the, and there are only so many services that people are probably going to subscribe to.
Right. And it's super fragmented. And like, I don't believe that the CBS thing is going to take off at all. I don't think the NBC Universal one is going to take off at all. you know, eventually people are either going to do Netflix or they can do Hulu. And I think you and I may have talked before that, like, I think that once people become more familiar, if people start getting into dropping cable, and just go, you know, they cord cut and then they start putting these little bundles together and start to pay $7.99 here or whatever, I think they will eventually, if they hear about Acorn, the British, where has all the British shows, I think people will subscribe to that because I think that's a good deal for people. It's just not as well known as the other ones. So.
Well, Hulu, you know, is owned by the networks, and most network programming, or a lot of network programming, not the CBS stuff, but a lot of stuff ends up on Hulu the next day. And they've got an ad-free, you know, whatever it is, $10 a month thing. And you're right. If you don't want to build your own service, you know, the networks basically have their own alternative to Netflix, and they're putting content on it already. So,
well, that's the thing that makes me laugh is like they have a pretty great system in Hulu. Right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the user face and everything is pretty well done on Hulu.
Well, and now that they've got the ad-free version, you know, they can go directly up against Netflix.
Absolutely. And let's not forget on that how they actually got that ad-free version. It's kind of a, you know, you should be getting that for $7.99, not $11.99.
True.
Or whatever that it's paying for it. So now that people are actually paying, because they were paying $7.99 for ad supported, which I was always troubled by anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, why am I paying $7.99 when I got to watch all these dumb ads? But people became used to it, and now they're like, okay, anything to get rid of this, I will actually pay more. So in some ways, they sort of defaulted over time into this, like a luxury, you know, tax almost on people's viewing habits. And so the networks are making money out of that and they're doing fine. But it's funny that they have to be so greedy. It's like, yeah, we want to give you this, but we also want to have our own platform. I think, as you said 5 minutes ago, those platforms are not going to work.
It's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough.
Maybe they'll get cross-bundled and there'll be all sorts of different ways to buy these things. But, you know, I give Les Moonves credit. When we talked about the new Star Trek series being on CBS All Access, I mean, full credit for doing that. And if you believe truly that at some point that's going to be your product, is your content bundle, then yeah, you should probably try to do your own thing. But can you do it? Can you make the switch, or are you better off as one of the owners of Hulu and letting that be sort of where all the bundles live inside? I don't know.
We need to call this episode Hot Cross Bundled.
I don't know. The dinosaur ship is looking pretty strong, but we'll see.
Oh, yeah, strong dinosaur. I had already forgotten about the dinosaur
ship. Yeah, see? It's still out there in the mud. It's just sitting there.
You can't turn that thing around.
No,
you
can't.
It's in the harbor.
It is stuck. It's a dinosaur hollowed out, turned into a ship, and it is stuck. Some other news. Before we get on to some of the other TV reviews you did, I wanted to mention there was a little more Netflix news. Jessica Jones got renewed for a third season, which I thought was good, or second season, which I thought was good news.
Yep.
It was a good show. It seems to me, maybe the reporting on this is so weird. I kind of feel like Netflix went into this deal with Marvel kind of not expecting these things would just be one-offs, like miniseries. And then Daredevil did well and Jessica Jones did well. And it almost seems like they were caught flat-footed, where they're like, oh, I guess we should do more Daredevil. And so they are, and now they're going to do more Jessica Jones, because their original plan was to do like these four connected series and then a culmination in this Defenders series. And now, I don't know, it seems like maybe they're a little surprised that they got, I mean, it's good because it's a success, but it seems like maybe they're diverting from their original plan.
I think that they are too. And they're, you know, look, they were on the last day. I only stayed for half the day. I will say that Netflix, I think, is really a threat, and they are very strong. I think a lot of their programming is good. You know, there's the Judd Apatow series, Love, is coming up, and you know, there's stuff on there that I wouldn't watch. Like, I'm not going to watch Degrassi or Fuller House, and I think Grace and Frankie is terrible. But there's an audience for each and one of those, and I can tell you because all the Grace and Frankie people still email me.
Yeah.
Hate mail.
Well, they know it, and they know it, right? Because Netflix knows exactly who's watching what, so they know.
Absolutely. And, you know, they succeed even when it looks like they're going to fail. Like, honestly, they didn't start promoting Making a Murderer until December. And it was people were like, wait, what is this thing?
Making a Murderer, we haven't even talked about that show, but right. I heard about that first from social media. Because I saw people on Twitter saying, oh my God, I'm watching Making a Murderer. And I had no idea what it was or where it was. And then I found out it was on Netflix and I started watching it. But I was entirely word of mouth.
Yeah. And so it's almost like they succeed even when they could have failed. I mean, there was no promotion. And, you know, they put, it's just weird. The streaming services are weird. Amazon is one of the weirdest things in the world to me. Like, there is, I mean, we could talk about that, but like, boy, you would think that if they make all this original content, they would actually direct people to it. There's no page for it.
Yeah.
It's like, I need diapers. Let's see. I need a little bit. I need this t-shirt.
Some cat litter.
Oh, hey, look. Here's a new series.
Oh, yeah. Man in the High Castle, you say. Mozart in the Jungle, you say.
Yeah. People who bought these diapers also watched.
Speaking of Mozart in the Jungle, which won the Golden Globe, the Golden Globes, let's not even talk about them, whatever. But that you mentioned that show before. I had that on my list, and we started watching it. I realized that I was watching almost no comedies anymore. And now I'm watching a bunch of great comedies, but they're all over the place, and they're new ones that I haven't watched before. So Mozart in the Jungle is pretty good. Yeah. Just finished season two, finally, of You're the Worst, which is great. You got a shout out on stage for your conversion to the cause of You're the Worst. That was good. So it's like there's Master of None was a great, you know, comedy series. Fantastic
stuff.
Have
you started Catastrophe yet?
I've watched the first two of those, and that's very good too.
I love it. So yeah. And then there's Casual on Hulu. So there's lots of good stuff out there.
So much, right? But it's kind of coming from these unexpected places. They're a lot of this stuff is not, it's not network comedies anymore. It's cable and streaming comedies. But anyway, Amazon, that's an example of like Mozart. Until you mentioned it, I didn't even know that it existed. And now a lot of people discovered it because of the Golden Globes. And it's actually pretty good. That's a fun show. I liked it.
Yeah. And if anybody it's funny because you and I were kind of searching for what was the takeaway from the network shows, and it's just that they're just trying to exist. None of their stuff is very exciting to me, but they're living in a model that it's the dinosaur ship. They're living in that. They're living inside of it, and I feel bad for them because there's unless you have an empire, which still gets ratings, but it's creatively not very exciting. What are you going to do? Now you have NBC all of a sudden deciding that they are like, we kind of want to get back into the comedy business. And the reason they did that, Jason, I don't want to take too much time, but they have two shows that I'm pretty sure they thought were not going to work and that were just kind of filling the gap. One of them was Superstore,
right,
that they put out there with America Ferrera. Another one from last season was Carmichael Show, which they did pair with another series that they were burning off for sure. And so critics liked the Carmichael Show. Fans of Superstore said, okay, the pilot wasn't very good, but it's getting better every week. And all of a sudden, NBC's like, does that mean we have a comedy brand now? So they're kind of getting back into it by default. So my takeaway from the networks is, I don't think they know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. And they're putting out shows into this 412 scripted universe where I don't want to spend my time watching them. So that was my TCA takeaway. Nothing popped out very exciting for anybody. So if you're making a calendar at home, you can pretty much exclude the networks.
So basically the dinosaur ship got kind of pushed to the left a little bit. And the captain was like, oh, left. All
right. Right. Yes. That's a good direction to
okay,
go.
It fine.
Tilted a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. We're tilting that direction. Okay.
I think people were jumping off of it and it tilted it. And, they took that as a direction.
It could be. You reviewed a bunch of stuff. In the midst of all of this, you reviewed a bunch of stuff. I have a bunch of reviews by you here. So we should probably blast through them a little bit.
Sure, let's do that.
Mad Dogs.
Mad Dogs, this review probably went up today. Is it up
you
yet?
It did go today, yeah.
Okay.
As we record this, simultaneously, yes. Worldwide.
That is kind of scary. It's up and it's in the ether. I haven't even tweeted it out yet. It's a miracle. You know, it's not very good. I think it's going to sit there on Amazon and you can go watch it. My problem with it was...
Well, that's how the streaming services work. They just sit there, right?
They just sit there. They'll be there when you want to watch it. I don't think this is a very bingeable series, because if you binge this series, it's basically... There's four friends or five friends. One of the friends is in Belize. He's been down there for a year or so. He lives on the beach. He invites his four best friends to come down there, and then chaos ensues. It's a remake of a British series. The guy who created the British series is involved in this one, as is Sean Ryan from, you know, The Shield and stuff. But I don't think it's a bingeable model, because the whole engine that drives Mad Dogs is four of these guys get in preposterous situations and they're on the run, and then they turn the corner and then they, you know, the car crashes into another car. Every turn is something worse, right? And so at some point you're like, okay, these are the dumbest four people in the world, or I can't watch you bumble into, like, I just fell out of the airplane into a cave and down into a hole. Story-wise, it doesn't make any sense. It's just, you're like, okay, that's, no one would ever do that. And it's so, these preposterous situations. So it doesn't actually lend itself to streaming, but it's overall, it was just a series that I was not a big fan of.
All right. Yeah, it was, yeah. That says it all. How about London Spy, though? That's a winner, right? We talked about that a while ago, that there'll be inevitably be an American version that totally screws it up. But this is the original BBC America version.
Yes. So, and I've seen all 5 hours of it. I really love it. The acting is great. The writing is very strong. It's less of a spy story than it is a love story. There are some pretty amazing dramatic performances in there. I think if you look, and it's really slow, so we should tell people about it. As I say in my review, it's kind of a throwback to slow TV. So if you're a fan of Rectify, you know, the last of the American slow TV.
Anytime you can use languid in a review.
Yes, it's very languid. Mm-hmm. It takes its place. You know, it's beautifully shot. You have the same director through all five episodes. I think it works better as a love story than it does as a spy story. So when you get to the finale, it's the journey there. It's not the finale. But I like that one. I endorsed it.
All right. London Spy. And again, when Seattle Spy comes on, don't watch that. It won't be as good. Baskets. I saw a very funny tweet from one of your colleagues in the media who said there are 22 people in the world for whom Baskets will be their favorite TV series.
Yes.
So I guess you got to watch it to find out if you're one of those people. And I thought that's an interesting way of saying narrow audience for this.
Yeah, I was. FX had a really good TCA, which we haven't talked about, but I will incorporate that into my Baskets analysis. And that is, Baskets was a really interesting swing and miss for me. I really wanted to like it, but it's co-created by the stars, Zach Galifianakis, Louis C.K., and John, I can't remember his name. Crystal, I can't remember.
Crystal, yeah.
John Crystal, yeah. Who's at Portlandia. And you know, he's a very smart dude, and he's involved in a lot of really interesting projects. And the three of them came up with this idea, and I think as my review said, it's a great idea that's missing all the funny parts. And you need a rooting interest in Zach Galifianakis' character, who basically is a guy from Bakersfield who wants to be a clown, so he goes to study in Paris. But he can't speak French. And I love that joke. And it plays out in the pilot very winningly. because he's still kind of a sad sack at that point. He just wants to be a clown, and he's just not good at it. And he's made this terrible mistake because he can't speak French. Meanwhile, he picks up a French girlfriend who doesn't like him and wants to, you know, get a green card and come back with him. He comes back to Bakersfield and is reduced to being a rodeo clown. And every episode is that. And he's not a likable character. So, and he's mean. And so you never get a sense that he actually is talented or creative. So why would you want to follow the story of this person? And it's a series that doesn't have a whole lot of laughs, but I will say that, Louis Anderson, who was cast as his mother, is fantastic. I hope he gets nominations for that role. But I don't know how long this series is going to last. Yeah. Honestly,
I saw one review that said essentially most of the supporting cast you could look at and say that they would make an interesting show. But then there's Zach Galifianakis in the middle of it. Not so interesting.
The DNA of it, Jason, is that he's not likable.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Louis is likable, right? In the series. Like, he's likable.
Absolutely.
A good dad and all that stuff. And I outlined that in my review if people want to read that. But it's just, I think it was a big swing and a miss. It's beautifully shot. It's really kind of funny. And Jonathan Crissell did some of that as well. But in the future, I think FX is going to do much better with Donald Glover's upcoming series called Atlanta. And he was at press tour, and that was one of the better panels. It's all shot on location in Atlanta. It's going to be really good, I think. And you're going to see Donald Glover in a way you haven't really seen him before. And I think that's going to be good. Oh. And so, yeah, so FX was there, and they had You're the Worst, which you're a big fan of. I'm a big fan of.
So good.
They had a great panel for the second season of Man Seeking Woman, which is a show I think is the most underrated FX series, and people should – you know, binge that and catch up get into the second season. It's very funny. They have what will probably be their biggest hits this year in The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. That's going to be huge. They had a panel for The Americans, which is coming back. It was so fun to be on that one. And then they had Baskets and they had Atlanta. I mean, that tells you what that network is doing right now. They're pretty much hitting everything out of the park, or if not, they're swinging for the fences on Baskets.
What about we mentioned Angie Tribeca. Is there more to say about that? We mentioned that, I think, last week or two weeks ago when we were on, but now it's out and your review is up.
Yeah, I think people should try to check it out. You can watch actually all 10 episodes. You can see them online, or you can see them I think you can get them on TBS.
It's a TBS show, but you can also binge it. We talked about that. They did their whole first season, you know, binge and all of that. And, you know, the short version is, if you remember, like, Police Squad or Sledgehammer, these kind of broad parody shows, that's what it is with Rashida
Jones.
Yeah,
and you have to be, and like, my takeaway was you have to be in the mood for it.
Yeah, sure. Oh, totally.
You know, if you want something really goofy, you know, it's like, you know, surely you like this show. Don't call me Shirley. If you want that kind of humor, that it's there in spades. So.
Okay, we got two more to get through. Teachers on TV Land.
I love that one. And I think that's kind of what I did compare that a little bit to Angie Tribeca, in that I would watch the Angie Tribeca episodes. It's just that I'm not compelled to do it. I found Teachers a much more winning combination of it's not a gimmick. You don't have to be in the mood for it. It's just very funny, and the ensemble of women who are at the core of that show are very, very funny, very talented. They write it all, direct it, star in it, and they're great. And I loved it. It's a simple show. It's like it's one of the comedies type, like a Comedy Central type series where, you know, it doesn't have to be so ruggedly tied to being like, this has to look like it was shot for $5 million. It's like, okay, let's shoot it at this school and we'll be loose about it and it'll be funny. Hmm. So I like it.
Yeah, it's a nice idea. One more review, and we've already touched on it, but we just have to say, since it's coming on, that you reviewed the X-Files. Like you said at the time, you saw the first episode. It didn't change your mind from the clip that you saw back at the summer press tour, which is that you saw the first episode, it's really bad, and rumor has it that the third episode is good, maybe, and nobody knows whether other episodes are good, and the second episode sounds like isn't that good. And it's one of those things that I literally saw a review that said, if you're an X-Files fan, just don't watch the first episode.
Right. It's such a terrible first hour.
Because it's all exposition. It's all, let's figure out where this fits in the mythology and timeline of the series, which if you don't really care, then if you're not like taking studious notes about the chronology of the X-Files, maybe you don't care.
Well, and also I think when they had their panel, after my review had already gone,
Didn't get to go to the party.
I didn't go to the party. No. I didn't go to either party. I didn't go to the specific X-Files premiere party, and I didn't go to the Fox party. Although on that one, I was recovering from my food poisoning. But what they did say on the – well, A, look, I'm not even going to mess around. My review was definitely responsible for getting those other two sent out. I mean, that's – Fox even admitted it. Hmm. So but what they said was they shot that first episode basically like everybody just sort of pulled their cars up and they started filming. And so the fact that Mulder and Scully and the actors behind them, Duchovny and Gillian
Anderson yeah.
just seemed so placid and sleepy, that could have something to do with it starting right away and there was no feel for it. So maybe the other episodes do get better. What I have heard is first episode's terrible, I can confirm. Second episode, people jokingly say, not very good, but actually not terrible, but not good either. So just less than terrible. And the third episode is very good.
Which is the Darren Morgan episode, so it's not surprising.
People who have seen it are almost uniformly in love with that episode, which I think is a good sign. I think the downside is that Chris Carter has two more of the final three episodes. So,
yeah. Yep.
Your results may vary.
I'll throw in, I watched Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
Which I can just throw in the camp of, and I'm a big fan of Arrow and Flash, and I'm just going to throw it in the camp of, I think this maybe was a mistake, and your premise is so complicated that you have to spend your first episode, and perhaps your first two episodes, explaining who everybody is and why they're there and convoluting a reason why that the show should happen seems like maybe a mistake all around, and that either you needed a simpler premise or you should have just thrown all the characters in and said with a wink, you know, let's just go with this. And instead, it does neither of those things. It just, like we said, and like Dan Feinberg said, it's the legends of exposition. It's
legend of yes,
so painful. So yeah,
and so it's funny because I don't have any backstory in any of that stuff, and I didn't watch the pilot. But I will say this is a perfect example of how trailers can lie, because the trailer for it looks really good.
Well, in fact, I think they kind of blew it because they did a special trailer for it. Uh-huh. They acted it out because they didn't have a pilot. They went straight to series. They just did this on they did a rooftop scene basically with all these actors as their trailer, and so in the first episode they basically reshot some of that, but they wanted to like use some of the dialogue from that thing, so they couldn't use the way they shot it. It was there was no way to reuse it, but they sort of recycled it into the story, and it really falls flat in the when they try to get the magic of their trailer back. It's it's a misstep from the maybe they'll, I mean, like somebody like Mo Ryan, who is much more open to nerdy TV shows, even her review, which had a little light of hope, it was very much like maybe they'll get it together. That was the ray of hope, was
sad.
Maybe they'll get it together after they get past this premise part, but it's too bad. So we'll see, but I can't report good things about that. And I had two other things to report to you before we get to the letters.
Okay.
Doctor Who change. You saw it. I saw it. Stephen Moffat is going to do, they're shooting soon, I guess in May, they're starting the production on the 10th season of Doctor Who. Which originally could have been timed to air in the fall and then after the new year, but they're holding it until 2017. So there will be only a Christmas special in 2016. It's the least amount of Doctor Who shown in a calendar year since the show came back. Wow. So that's kind of a bummer. And then Stephen Moffat, it's his last season. And then Chris Chibnall, who was the guy who did Broadchurch. Mm-hmm. And he's got that BAFTA to get him the cred he needs as a showrunner. He has a long history with Doctor Who. He's a lifelong fan, just like Stephen Moffat. And he worked he's written for the show, and he ran the spinoff Torchwood with Russell T. Davis for a couple of years. So he's definitely got all the credibility that the BBC wants. And Life on Mars. So okay. he's got credibility that the BBC basically has to require, given that this is now a global brand that makes a lot of money for them. They need somebody who is not just a writer, but, you know, has sort of got showrunning credentials and has the credibility that somebody like Chris Chibnall has. It's funny because I don't love his episodes of Doctor Who, but I love Broadchurch. So, you know, I'm going to give him full cred for that, that he did some. He left the nest, basically, of Doctor Who because he knew he wasn't going to be the one to run that show. Went off and did Law & Order UK, went off and did Broadchurch, produced some other stuff, and you know, has built his resume to the point where they're going to give him the keys, and the 11th season in 2018, I guess, will be Chris Chibnall, and who knows if Peter Capaldi, I'm going to assume Peter Capaldi is going to leave with Stephen Moffat, but we'll find out. It's like a year away before
there's some big news coming up on that Doctor Who. Did Moffat did five seasons though?
This is going to be his sixth
season. Okay.
So that's a lot of time. That's, I think, above and beyond for him. And I feel like, as a fan, I got to say, I think he's great. Coupling is one of my all-time favorite sitcoms. I'm not just a Doctor Who fan, but a Stephen Moffat fan. I feel like he said everything he needs to say in Doctor Who. I feel like he has plumbed, you know, every idea he's ever had, and he is a brilliant guy. And he is like, what if we did the show like this? What if the show was about itself? All of these things. I feel like he's gotten a chance to do all of them. So I can't be sad. I feel like he's going to get to do other stuff, and that's probably good for him. Because that's even on your favorite thing. It's like eating cake for every meal. At some point, you're just going to hate cake.
and for him doing Sherlock at the same time.
Yeah, well, really, I mean, that's got to be brutal. I mean, I saw somebody who knows him tweet that they're looking forward to the fact that he's going to be able to, like, have a day off for the first time in like 4 years because he's been doing Sherlock and Doctor Who.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of successful showrunners end up getting that way. Your fame gets you access that you maybe didn't have even a show or two prior. And it's hard to say no.
Yeah.
It's hard to say like, yeah, I want to do that too. And then that becomes a hit. And you're like, whoa, I'm balancing two shows and I have no life.
Right, exactly. Oh, I feel that way. I mean, I mentioned Legends of Tomorrow. I feel like, you know, I have a great trust in the Flash and Arrow producers, but now that they're doing Flash and Arrow and Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow, you know, how can you say no? And their track record is good. So yeah, give them more to do. And at some point you have to say, maybe it's too much. Maybe you're doing too much and you're spread too thin and you can't run four of those shows.
I think that the worst thing that can happen to a show like that is the late night executive phone call, which is how that generated. What if we do this?
Well, and unlike streaming, this is a case where streaming has an advantage. On something like Netflix, the show order is half of it what it is for these CW shows.
Yeah.
And they're staggered. They don't have like traditional seasons. So if you want to do another Jessica Jones, that's great. But it's going to be like a year and a half from now. And like Daredevil got 13 and they ordered it. And now there'll be another 13 in a couple of months. But it's not. It's just not the same. They're you know, moving things in and out. Whereas with the Greg Berlanti stuff, you know, theoretically, well, Legends of Tomorrow is a mid-season show, but like the other three shows, that's like 80 hours of TV that they're producing now.
It's too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too much.
It's crazy. And my last point is just to say that thanks again to the Golden Globes, because this is one of the ways where the Golden Globes is good is visibility. With Crazy Ex-Girlfriend winning, CW did an incredibly smart thing, which is they put all the episodes on Hulu. Mm-hmm. And so I've been watching that because, you know, Hulu, they do the thing where it's like the last five that have aired. So it's hard to get into a show, which I think is a big mistake, and that they should always have for especially a new show. They should always keep the first three or four episodes up.
I totally agree.
But but they did that with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And so now I'm watching that. And that's a good show. That's a really good show.
And I think we should tell people to hurry for that because that may come down soon. That's a limited time.
Yeah, that's like they're trying to get people who heard about it on the Golden Globes, but it's super smart. So yeah, you should run and watch Rachel Bloom and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. It's don't pay no attention to the title. I know a lot of people get kind of creeped out by the title because they feel like it's going to be this weird sexist show, and it's not at all. That the tone, you'll understand why the title is the way it is, I think, when you see the tone of the show.
Yes, also a female creator, female showrunner.
It's absolutely
big female writing staff, so it's
and it's very good, and you'll never think of West Covina, California the same way again.
As one does.
All right, you wanna do some letters really quick before we
go? Absolutely, since we've been held hostage in the hotel. Let's yeah. do it.
Oh, and William Blake Heron, our friend, the producer of Agent X, said that he listened to the last episode and laughed through the tears about the change of leadership at TNT.
Yeah.
Yep. It was never going to be, sadly. All right. Here's one from, this looks like from Sam Adams. He doesn't have an area code. Come on, okay. Sam. He's from the Gmail, let's say.
Okay, he's from the Gmail.
He says, hello, I've been racking my brain for a not a thing for weeks, and I think I finally found one. I was binge-watching Jessica Jones for a second time. I loved it. I finished it, too, and it's really good. There's a scene where they have to bribe a tough morgue front desk guy. Do you remember this scene? I don't know if you saw this. They finally come to an agreement. They're gonna bribe him. He says, now, no funny business. To which Sam says, do morgue front desk guys tend to get a lot of good Samaritan detectives that are looking out for a clue? I would have to imagine in real life, most of the people who are bribing morgues for alone time with their corpses have nothing but funny business on the agenda. That was very good. And then Sam's got a question. You guys helped me convince me to jump aboard the Blackish and Fresh Off the Boat trains, and I couldn't be a bigger fan. But what is going on with Blackish? Why did they let Dion Cole leave the show? And it seems like they're wasting the talents of Wanda Sykes.
Well, Dion Cole went to Angie Tribeca.
Uh-huh.
So there was that. He escaped. Yes, he's a big loss on there. But it's a chance for him to really shine in a show that he's more ingrained in. Yeah, and what was the other person?
Wanda Sykes says she basically has the same. She comes on, does the same joke every week.
Yeah, that's kind of her role. Like yeah. There's people who do just their thing, and that's kind of Wanda Sykes does Wanda.
All right. Let's see. Alan from the 660, the 660. he says, Dan Feinberg said NBC's You, Me, and the Apocalypse is Tim's problem. Is it any good?
I just found out it was my problem today, so I haven't seen it. We're both, to Dan's credit, Dan has historically gone from TCA to Sundance, which is in pure insanity, by the way. But so both of us are scrambling, and so he's like, hey, I was down on the list to review Outsiders on WGN America. And he's like, I've actually seen the first three. I can do that. Let's swap with You, Me, and the Apocalypse. And I was like, okay, I've watched neither, so I'll take it.
Right. You say you haven't seen it, but that's not true because you've seen The Last Man on Earth. Oh, zing! Oh,
my God. Well, I will say this. It's a funny thing because it's a British co-production.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see the very long trailer, and it was actually funny.
Huh.
So I don't know how many people have actually seen it, other critics. I have not seen any tweets or anything like that, but The trailer was not.
It's already aired in the UK.
Yeah, it's already finished. So oh. I think it did pretty well over there. So I don't know. I like the trailer, but trailers can lie. Trailers can lie.
Trailers.
They
can,
are in fact
do lie.
Generated lie.
Yeah, they're made. Yeah, they're made to lie. That's what they're there for.
That's what.
Yeah. We've got our friend Brando in the 301 saying, "I wonder what your thoughts on." Oh, well, we already did this. NBC's shocking reveal of having Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon's ratings. Doesn't this strike you as being kind of out of touch? does this actually mean anything when Netflix is operating under a completely different business model? It seems this is the equivalent of old man yells at cloud. Literally, like, the cloud is. Yeah, okay. Well, we already covered that. Brando, see, look what we did.
Yeah, see, we were right ahead of him. Yeah.
Solid. Jacob from the 270, not the holler. This is not the holler.
Oh, not the holler. Okay, yeah.
Tim, do you have any good recommendations for medical dramas similar to House?
Ooh.
Did we do this letter already?
Well,
it
I
seems
don't remember
so familiar.
It. I would say that maybe because I probably said the Nick, but if I didn't, my standard reply would be I am the worst person to ask that question to because I don't watch hospital dramas because they freak me out.
Right. Well, so the Nick is your hospital drama of choice, so I think that has to be your pick.
Yeah, that's my
pick. And I would say if you want it, or if it's the smartness and irascibility of House that is working for you, then you should try, I don't know, Elementary, maybe?
Yes. Actually, that's very smart. I'm tapping my nose right now.
All right, good. Well done.
Visual.
Okay, here's the last one. This is Chris from the 206, formerly of the 415. TVTM, why are the rise of Amazon, Netflix, and Hulu original content being reported in the press as a huge disruption for the networks. Taking Netflix and Hulu as examples, their subscription business model seems pretty similar to HBO and Showtime, which have been around for a long time. I can see how these new players could bid up the prices for original content, and that did come out, right, at the that FX got outbid for some stuff. But only to the extent they bid on the same shows. Maybe Dick Wolf will be on Hulu, he says. To me, nope. To me, the big disruption for Netflix is to the cable companies, not to the networks. What am I missing? Chris in the 206.
You're missing, you're taking the audience away. It's just all these choices. I mean, we started with Times of Confusion, I think, mm-hmm. and now we're on to too much TV and peak TV. And, you know, you're giving people more options than they can actually handle. And a lot of cases they're getting outside of CBS, which has like its very own distinct key audience. You're offering stuff that's better. And so people don't watch, numbers go down. And when the numbers go down, you have something you have to do make goods on the ads because you haven't reached your threshold of your demographic and ad sales. It's a mess.
So basically $6 billion being spent on other shows that they can watch other than yours.
Right. And it does do that, you know, because now when you have everybody this is a little bit inside baseball, when you have that old network thing where everybody's casting shows at the same time, well, now you have Netflix they don't go on anybody's schedule. They just do things as they wish. And sometimes when they announce something or they say, yes, do that, it happens to fall in the same window as the networks. And then what are you going to do if you're an actor? Do I go out for this NBC comedy or do I go do something on Netflix where there seems to be a gigantic pile of money? So it hurts all the way around.
All those poor people on the dinosaur ship.
I'm going to have to take that metaphor and extend that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to a workshop it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to workshop it. You will see it on the next season of Vikings.
I'd love to see that all week. So I think we've reached the end for this week, but I'm glad you're feeling better and I'm glad you're back home safely.
I can add to that with, I don't think I've ever been more happy to be home. Mm-hmm. That was a terrible trip, and you never want to get sick on press tour, and you never want to get sort of like one day in between back-to-back sick. So I think I'm almost over it. I'm actually, when this goes out worldwide, simultaneously, I will be spending the next day in San Francisco interviewing the cast on stage, live on stage in San Francisco as part of SF Sketchfest.
Right, Bob's Burgers.
Bob's Burgers. Yeah. So
sweet.
Very excited.
Yeah, that's good. See, you're getting back in the swing of it.
Yeah, and then I'm going to exhale and not do anything after that.
We were watching Master of None, and my daughter walked by and was like, "Hey, I thought you were watching Bob's Burgers," because H. John Benjamin was his character was on Master of None. We're like, "Nope, it's that guy.
It's that guy."
Yeah, because she loves Bob's Burgers too.
Every show he's been in, I was thinking, I wonder if there's an actor who I've liked who's just a voice actor, but I wonder if he's been in everything that I've liked every show he's been in.
It's because Archer too. Yeah.
Yeah, and
it's crazy.
Yeah, he was on Dr. Katz and Home Movies. So it's like, crazy.
That's great. Well, okay, so that'll be fun. I hope you have a good time doing that. And
Thank you. And
next week we'll be back simultaneously worldwide, spending a little bit less than $6 billion on our original content, just slightly less.
But we'll be up to date now.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So thanks to everybody out there. Thanks for being patient last week. Just didn't happen. The food poisoning, the double whammy. Was not a good thing. But we're back. Yeah. We're back in the saddle now. Ready to go.
We are.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
All right, Jason. Thank you.
Bye, everybody. See you next week.